So we are now being recorded and we are now going to start. Hello and welcome to The Aparo Effect, a podcast about all things technologically related to the community and how nonprofits and corporate partners can connect. And today we have an interesting conversation. My name is Kim Lanfear. I'm Aparo's CEO, and I'm delighted to be talking to Adam Boitnot, who is the CEO of Hylane. And I'm going to let him give you a little more information about that. And we're going to have a conversation here about expansion. And hopefully this conversation we're going to have with Adam about expanding in other markets will be useful to nonprofits as well and other companies as they think about what happens when you expand and the things you have to think about. So Adam, let me allow you to introduce yourself just a little bit more than I did.
Yeah, thanks, Kim. Thanks for having me on. Adam Boitnot, I'm the founder and CEO here at Hylane, and Hylane is a software consulting business started here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we started in 2017, and since then we've expanded to Raleigh, Atlanta, Dallas, and Indianapolis as well. And Indianapolis is our newest market as of this year. And we kind of take a somewhat of a different approach to how we grow into other markets. And I think that is a footprint that I like a lot, but it's not always the proper footprint for everybody either, based off your resources and kind of your time commitment to that market. So we have 130 employees here today at Hylane, and between all of our different markets and kind of how we approach culture is one of the big difference makers that we have here. And we try to, you know, reproduce that culture in every market that we get to.
So many things that you just put out there, even just in your introduction, that I want to dive into. So I'm going to kind of start at the beginning. So I've known Adam for a long time on his journey and watched him do this expansion. And it's been amazing to watch because it's most successful. And for many nonprofits out there who are itty bitty little companies, you know, Adam started as an itty bitty little company. And he is, as he just said, not an itty bitty little company anymore. He's got a substantial number of employees. So tell us a little bit about those early days when you were small. Was it always the plan to expand to multiple markets? Or if not, when did you decide that, yeah, that's what you wanted to do?
Yeah. So in the early days, it was just me in my home office. So at that point, I was just hoping to sell one thing and maybe hire one person. But, you know, since then, things have gone pretty well. The first time we decided to expand was really the first time we thought about it. We didn't set out with that in mind. But we were having a good run in Charlotte. And our first expansion was to Raleigh. And it just made sense proximity-wise just to be in another part of the state where we were already having some good success and good word of mouth from our clients that we had been helping here. So Raleigh was the first time that we expanded. And when I looked at that market, I initially wanted to hire somebody who knew Raleigh really well and could just, you know, kind of stand up and go. Interviewed a lot of people, liked a lot of people, almost made offers to some. But then someone I've worked with before came to me and said, "Do you ever think about me, you know, going to Raleigh and doing that?" And she lived in Virginia. Her name is Jenna Lazenby, and I had worked with her, like I said before. And I trusted her and her work ethic and her ability to build relationships. What she didn't have is didn't know the market. But to me, that the trust piece is a big part of our culture, and that's what mattered in that first expansion. So we moved Jenna to Raleigh February of 2020, and in March of 2020, the whole world shut down. And she was stuck in her apartment, didn't know anybody. So as we typically do, we just said, you know what? We like to invest in the community anyway. So spend this year of COVID investing in the community. And you know, that really paid off for us really well. Just diving in and being a figurehead in that Raleigh community has been really important for her success and our success in that market. You know, instead of just trying to force business and sales, it's, you know, show them you care, and then they'll give back to you. It's kind of our model.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because you mentioned it when you first introduced yourself, and I know it to be true, and I heard you say it, and as you were just talking about the early days of your expansion, the culture. So yeah. Thinking about how the culture has made it easy to expand or difficult to expand. Talk to us on two things, kind of a two-part question. One, tell us what that culture is. You know, what are the pillars of that culture? Why does it matter that those are the pillars of that culture? And then the positives and negatives of that culture as you expand.
Yeah. So our culture is based off of the acronym that we chose, TRUST acronym, right? So transparency, results focused, upbeat, soliciting feedback, and being thankful. And all those are real important variables of a culture. In fact, when somebody's just kind of not working out as an employee here, we can oftentimes point to a piece of the culture that's just misaligned, right? So very important here in how we make all the decisions. When we expand, it's a pretty methodical choice. You take the expansion recently to Indianapolis. A CIO that I knew in Indianapolis recommended someone to me, and I actually spent 6 months interviewing him to make sure he was the right culture fit before we put him in that market to represent Highland and our culture and our brand. So because we're so focused on culture, sometimes it's a little slower to do things, but I think the results pay off faster in that. But we're very patient when we go to new markets. We like I said, we want to invest. We want to show them we care. So we're not like some people when they go to a new market, they'll say, all right, if we're not at this point in a year, I'm out, right? We are much more patient than that because the way we do things pays dividends over time. But you have to build that trust, and that doesn't happen just by putting a shingle out in the market and hiring somebody.
So I'm going to flip the table a little bit on the next question because some of the things you just said made me think about nonprofits, you know, mm-hmm. as you were talking about that. And in full transparency, Adam is the chair of Aparo right now, the board chair of Aparo. And so he's been very instrumental because Aparo is now based in Charlotte and is expanding into Raleigh and Atlanta. Obviously, proximity is the reason for some of those decisions of those markets. So when you're thinking about a nonprofit, and not just Aparo, though you have obviously insights into that, but one of the things you said was, you know, we have patience in a market. And I think about nonprofits who may not have the same patience from the standpoint of financials. And maybe I'm wrong on that assumption. So certainly challenge me on that assumption. But knowing what you know about us, this is a convoluted question, but Aparo has a real importance on culture as well. And I think about that being fundamental to the strength of an organization, the ability of an organization to stand and stand strong in tougher times. So I think I would, I'm all over the place here, but I'm first making a statement and I want to echo what you were talking about, because I think I see certainly in Aparo, when we have a strong culture of trust as well, all based on trust, that gives us more confidence to say, okay, we're ready to try something that's different, that's maybe going to be a little scary, that's maybe going to be good for us, but it's going to be a journey, right? It's not going to be open the door and there you are. It's going to have a journey to it that's going to have ups and downs. Yeah. And so I think when I heard you talking about taking 6 months to hire a person, we do that within Aparo. I don't know that all nonprofits have the ability to do that, because nonprofits, Aparo hasn't had a huge turnover recently, but typically nonprofits are in a situation where they're seeing 25%, maybe even 30% of turnover a year because their salaries are so much lower. So I'm thinking about, from your position as chair, having seen what you've seen at Aparo, and what advice might you give to an organization that's having that kind of turnover situation? It's hard to keep a culture solid when you've got that kind of turnover. Is that the right time to expand, or do they have to sit still longer? You know, what's your thought about that? And maybe I'm asking too much. I don't know.
No, I think, you know, it comes with an assessment of who you are and what variables you have, right? So if you don't have the luxury of paying a salary for multiple years without a significant level of results, that should feed into your strategy, right? You know, do you have to have a boots on the ground versus do you not have to have boots on the ground? You have to be honest about what is our cut timeline, right? So if our cut timeline's in 12 months, what are we going to do to make sure we hit that, right? What intentionality are we going to have to that market? We like to have people in the market. Others don't. In this virtual world that we're in, you may not need that. It's just an approach we've taken to be able to be more entrenched in the community based off the results that we desire over the long term. So everybody's different, whether it's a nonprofit, a for-profit, your kind of tolerance for success, your variables, the amount of cash you're able to kind of use to get that market started. And I think it all comes down, and not just here, but in everything that if somebody asks me kind of how to approach things, like, create a strategy based off your variables and be honest with yourself about what it is, and then run and implement that strategy. Make sure everybody's aligned together. So strategy is important, having the right ones important, but having people aligned to the same mission is the most important thing. If people rowing in the right direction will get somewhere. Now, whether it's the right place or not, you'll find out, but you'll get somewhere.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think when you talk about having people rowing in the boat together, I think about that T in your trust, transparency.
Yeah.
And again, going back to that culture, it almost feels like we keep going back to the culture. You don't have that strong culture, you can't expand. And that certainly might be something I would think in my position right now, but it sounds like you might be echoing it. I don't know. But to talk a little bit about that transparency and how you manifest that for your team so that you can make sure everybody's rowing together.
Yeah. Transparency here is, and just for me, typically and how I approach everyone is I'll be very honest with you, right? I'm going to try not to be a jerk about it, but sometimes you're going to hear some things you don't want to hear, right? But you'll always know the truth. You always know where it stands, good or bad. Right? And that's kind of the way we operate here. And I tell you, the time that I think we really boosted our culture the most at Highlane was during COVID. You know, companies like ours, a lot of companies we work with, we work in that kind of mid-market Fortune 500. And a lot of people were slowing projects down, didn't know what was going to happen. Took a big hit, put a lot of people on the bench. And we were very honest about that internally, the impact it was having. We exposed every bit of the business to our employees. And coming out of that into the better years after COVID, people have oftentimes reflected to me that built more trust than when we celebrate the wins. Because we know you'll tell us the truth. We know you're not afraid to tell us the truth. And, we just kind of, it seems simple. It's very easy once you get to do it because you don't have to remember, oh yeah, I kind of softened that up so they don't know the whole truth, right? I very rarely soften things. And we just had a situation. Our oldest daughter moved to college and she had a miscommunication with a friend there who wasn't maybe telling the whole truth. And it was just hard for her to understand. She's like, we're just so honest in our house. It just really bugged me that happened. I was like, mm-hmm. Yeah, so just go tell her. Say, hey, look, man, you may not love this, but that didn't
work. That's how I feel.
You're fine.
Right.
Yeah.
It is. And I think that's profound translating that to nonprofits because nonprofits so often come from a starvation mentality, right? Worried about being able to make the next payroll, worried about being able to, affect the things they want to affect in the quality that they want to affect because of resources, because they don't have something to sell. They have something to give away. And so giving away sometimes has challenges for funding. And I think about how many times I'm sure leaders in the nonprofit space don't do that because they themselves are feeling the stress of the lack of resources that they don't necessarily share that. But I would echo what you're saying because I feel that employees value knowing tough calls are coming, mm-hmm. or we're in a tough moment right now before we're making calls. This is what we're living in right now. So yeah, I might ask you to not do this professional development moment right now because that'll make a difference to how we can serve. So I think being upfront and straightforward is equally telling for nonprofits. And I don't know that we follow that as often.
Well, I think as leaders, Kim, I mean, there's a certain school of thought that you want to protect everybody so people don't leave and run for the door. And that's kind of the philosophy I tell our team here. And when we get a new leader in here, sometimes we're like, should you tell people all this? I'm like, look, man, if they can't handle it and they leave and they don't want to row with us towards success and getting out of the hole, then they're not the right person for the boat. So we might like them for the job that they're doing, but this boat that we're on, we need everybody together going in the same direction. And if you can't handle it, that's okay. Go somewhere else. Somebody else will sugarcoat that for you. We're just not going to do it.
Yeah, that's really profound. That's profound. So Aparo is looking at expanding into markets, thinking about how we're going to do that. And we're doing different approaches. We have some boots on the ground in one market and not boots on the ground in another market. As you've experienced what we're doing, do you have any thoughts about how the things we're doing have resonated to moments in your expansion or maybe not at all?
Absolutely. I love the experimentation. And we've done that in each market that we've been in, kind of how we've approached it. I mean, we'll be 6 years old next month. So we're
And how many markets are you in?
What's that? Five markets now? Charlotte,
six
Raleigh.
6 years old, and you're in five markets. That's remarkable. That's remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think experimentation is key to find out what works. We didn't know. I mean, when we first did it, and I think I've tried something different in every single market that we've been in. Learned something from each one. Maybe one day, maybe after this one, I'll know the exact perfect formula, but, you know, who knows? But it is an opportunity to experiment, and I love that you all are doing that and saying, all right, in Atlanta, we're going to do it this way, and Raleigh, we're going to do it this way, and, you know, maybe we'll take a little bit from each for the next one. And I think that's an important thing to know, especially when you're doing it for the first time. I mean, at the end of the day, everyone wants to believe they've got the perfect plan, but, you know, most people are just figuring it out as they go.
That is profound. And it's profound for nonprofits, because for those of you who are listening, you know, you got to go back to the beginning here. Adam was a guy in his office sitting there hoping that a business was going to grow. And so many of you who are listening who are nonprofits, you're people in a room and you're small and you're thinking about how you grow. And I think there's some profound lessons here. And think about culture first. Think about what you want to build and how you want to get a team of people rowing together, even though they may not be paid top dollar because you know they could go somewhere else and earn more. I still find that people who come into the nonprofit work, they're looking for something different anyway. And yeah. So, you know, lean into that, give them a culture that is different and trustworthy and can give them that kind of team that they want to be part of on a daily basis. And then start rowing and see if you can find ways to expand your mission. And it may not be across markets. You know, for a nonprofit, it may be just expanding across where you are so you're serving more. But how do you do that and do that in a sustainable way?
Yeah.
That's really profound. I love this conversation. And you guys know why I feel so lucky having Adam as the board of our chair, a chair of our board right now. So pretty exciting.
Thank you.
So I'm going to wrap us up. Because we're at the end of our time together. And I'm going to thank everybody for listening. I'm going to thank Adam for being here. Thank you for having a servant heart on top of being a smart business entrepreneur who is a successful business entrepreneur. And I'll say again, from knowing Adam for a while, you know, really bringing service forefront. So even though he may be a for-profit company, he's not thinking about is here, let me sell you a widget. He's thinking about, can I help you? Can I help you in some way? And maybe I have the skills to do that, can elevate what you're doing. And that's what we do in the nonprofit world. It's the same concept where we want to serve and we want to serve more and we want to just bring what we do well to more people. So there's a lot to learn from you, Adam, and I thank you for sharing it. Before I let you go, is there anything else you'd want to say for an audience to think about?
No, I appreciate being on the podcast and being able to share some of this and have the discussion. Hopefully it's been helpful for other nonprofits. And I know that Aparo is kind of that multiplier for nonprofits out there. We just encourage folks to reach out and see how Aparo can be helpful.
Absolutely. Thank you again for tuning into the Aparo Effect, and we'll see you the next time.